Hello, everybody. It's great to be here one more time today. My name is Gary Fowler. I'm the CEO, president, and founder of GSD Get You Done Venture Studios, a premier AI and quantum venture studio located in the heart of Silicon Valley. I'm a 17-time serial entrepreneur with several unicorns under the belt. I was on the original management team of Click Software, which was sold to Salesforce for $1.35 billion, also Eva.ai, an AI HR tech company that I co-founded with Dr. David Yang. We believe at GSD that intellectual capacity is evenly spread around the world, but opportunities are not. And with that, I have an incredible guest today. You know, today we're thrilled to have Matt Baxter, CEO of WedgeAR.com, an innovative platform transforming the way companies hire through powerful video interviewing software. Born out of Matt's own experience as an entrepreneur, starting his first company at just 15 years old, Wedge dramatically reduces hiring times by up to 50%, helping over 2,000 recruiters streamline the process with strategic integrations into leading applicant tracking systems. Wedge has quickly become a standout solution in remote and hybrid hiring landscape. Recognized as a top startup and industry innovator, Wedge is reshaping recruitment one interview at a time. So let's dive in with Matt. Hi, Matt. How are you doing today?
Gary, how you doing? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's good to see you. So, Matt, you launched your first company at 15. What motivated you to become an entrepreneur at such an early age?
You know, I wish I had some glamorous reason for it, but really the adolescent idea was I can go mow a lawn and make 30 to 40 to 50 bucks in an hour versus going and working at a fast food restaurant. And you quickly mow one, you realize you can mow two, and that's where it kept growing and kind of got the bug at an early on age where it's like, man, this thing is fun and I can grow it and I can dictate my own schedule, which means whatever that means. But it was just a fun opportunity to start early on and just realizing that it was kind of in my control. So loved it. Plenty of days I'd rather be mowing lawns and sending emails, but it definitely was a fun journey to start.
Can you tell us about your journey from running a lawn care business to founding Wedge? And then what sparked your interest in recruitment technology?
Yeah, so sold the lawn care company in 2015 and was just kind of reflecting on what made that company successful. And, you know, I probably hired 50 people through the years and I never looked at a resume once. Like, I didn't care if somebody knew how to mow a lawn or weed whack. I cared, can you shake my hand? Can you be personable? If you could do those things, I could teach you the rest. And as I started looking at the HR landscaping, everybody was putting so much energy, effort, stock into resumes. And that tells part of the story, but not the whole story about who somebody is. And so fast forward was kind of like, you know what, why don't we try to solve some of these issues that companies are facing where resumes suck, hiring great people's hard, finding the right talent that sticks with you is a major difficulty. And then the flip side, you have people who are really, really talented that may not have the best resume. So the idea was, let's launch something that allowed us to help companies identify top talent quickly and easily, and for candidates to stand out above and beyond resumes, cover letters, single sheets of paper. And that was kind of the adolescent idea stepping into this.
You know, so from an entrepreneurial standpoint, what key lessons from your first company shaped how you built and scaled Wedge?
There's tons of quotes around this, and so much of it is true. I mean, hard work beats a lot of things, and I was willing to work at get up at 3 a.m. or 4 a.m. and change oil on mowers and sharpen the blades and go to bed at 10 p.m, wake up again. So, I mean, I think hard work's definitely a big piece, but also the other thing that really has stuck with me and is transferable as well was the network effect. I mean, with lawn care, if you mow one person's lawn and it goes well, you're going to mow the neighbor's lawns and the neighbor's lawns and the neighbor's lawns. And it quickly allowed me to understand the concept of network effect, at least geographically in that world, but also how that begins to expand. And so that's something I take a lot of pride in, is building a strong network of people that I trust and respect. And it's not just for business transactions, but it's actually relationships. I think definitely network effect and hard work are two significant pieces.
What's the biggest challenge that you've had at Wedge?
I think one of the most difficult things, at least in HR tech, and this is probably true among other industries as well, but we're not really selling against competitors all that often. We're not necessarily selling against the big boys or anything like that. It's more selling against the status quo. So we're dealing with a demographic of people who work in HR who are trying to protect the company for all these different reasons. So by nature, they're risk averse or risk hesitant individuals. And so for us, it's showing the value that's worth the risk to try something new. I would definitely say that's a significant piece. And obviously we were around before COVID. So something like COVID inspires video to come into the world. So there's natural things that you kind of get lucky with or time right with or whatever the rationale you want to give. But I would say selling against the status quo has definitely been a challenge over the years and just navigating the waters of that.
You know, so let's deep dive into Wedge. So how's Wedge different from other video interviewing platforms in the market today?
Yeah, so First Batch, I would say one major difference between Wedge versus like a Zoom, a FaceTime, a Teams, Skype, you name it. Those are all synchronous platforms. We're asynchronous, but nobody knows how to spell asynchronous. So typically it's referred to as one way or on demand. So definitely asynchronous communication is one that's a time saver, kind of one way communication is a big piece. And then us versus other competitors, we definitely take a strong approach in partnering our technology with other bigger organizations. And so we have great partners in the applicant tracking system world, where our design is to be a very niche, very focused, very best in class solution specifically in the video space, so that our partners can benefit from our relationship versus trying to be competitive with some of the bigger players. And so we definitely take pride in being a very partner focused product. And I also think, and this is something that I get hundreds of messages a week from candidates on LinkedIn saying, that was actually the best candidate experience I ever went through. And I actually felt heard in the process. And not only does that, you know, tug on the heartstrings and make you feel good about what you built, but it also shows that we've actually built something that's impactful for candidates. And I think that's a pretty cool thing that we've done.
You know, your solution cuts time to hire by 50%. How exactly does it achieve such efficiency?
Yeah, so an interesting thing that's happening in the market in general is about 60% of candidates ghost when they apply for a job, meaning they apply for the position and they don't show up to the interview. That's called
candidate ghost. Why does that happen, Matt?
Two major reasons. Number one, Indeed, ZipRecruiter, LinkedIn, you all have instant apply. So you can apply to 100 different jobs that you're not really interested in, and you're automatically scheduled to interview. So naturally, you have all these recruiters who think all these candidates are interested, and they're really not. So that's number one. Number two, you can also collect unemployment in a lot of states as long as you are applying to a job but not actually interviewing. So you have a bunch of people who don't have any intent to actually interview for the process. Those are the two biggest issues.
You know, so one of the things that happened during COVID, I know with, you know, Eva, in fact, our business was up like 30X during, I pivoted the company. We went from your virtual assistant to remote workforce management, right? And remote workforce management has been the norm for the last few years. How's Wedge evolved to specifically address remote work hiring challenges?
Yeah, so by nature, whether you're in an environment where you're hiring a lot of people in person or you're in an environment where you're hiring a lot of people remotely, on the remote issue, you have a lot of people who are spending time on Zoom, on Skype, on FaceTime, on Teams. And so the evaluation of communication skills when they're not in person is certainly something that you need to do early on in the process and assess those things. So for the remote workforce, it's actually a remarkable tool to evaluate how people communicate, how they answer questions, how they present themselves. And it's a very efficient way of doing that early on. For the in-person, whether you're we work with a lot of restaurants, hospitality, retail, healthcare. It's a way to actually evaluate a little bit of who the person is virtually before you spend the time bringing them in person. Because I'm sure, Gary, you've had a lot of success in your years. You've hired a lot of people. You probably have had interviews where you knew in the first 30 seconds this wasn't a good fit, but yet you had to sit there for 30 minutes and be courteous or be kind. And that's a lot of time wasted for individuals across any position to spend. And so Wedge is definitely a beneficial tool, whether you're a remote workforce placement firm or company hiring a lot of remote workers, as well as in person.
You know, what was your approach to growing Wedge from initial product market fit to serving over 2,000 recruiters?
Like you early on in the days, but when you first start, it's like, we'll take anybody and everybody, right? Anybody who's willing to pay us a little bit of money and we'll figure it out later. As we started to grow, as we started to learn where the actual challenges are that and where the real problems are that we're solving, our focus has narrowed quite a bit. Like, so we're not necessarily an executive search firm platform. We're not going to help you place your CFO. If you have high volume, high turnover, customer facing type roles, that's where we can really be a major benefit. And that unfolds in a lot of different industries. But I think First, it was like nailing down the actual type of repeatable hiring roles that companies have and doubling down on that, and then starting to understand the industries that wrap around that was really how we got started.
You know, you're in Michigan, and we're dealing with companies all over the world. Sometimes it's difficult because people in Michigan don't get it, right? People in Ohio don't get it. People in Silicon Valley sometimes, unless they're inside of the circle, don't get it. So one is evaluations are a lot less generally, and you know, they're generally a year behind the times. So how do you deal with that being in Michigan? And how do you, you know, kind of adjust to the mentality?
Yeah, so I got pretty fortunate that in the capital raises we've done, we've actually raised capital in a format among more traditional high net worth individuals. A lot of previous business owners or current business owners who want to support somebody who's taken a leap. So there's not a lot of HR tech or even software companies coming out of Grand Rapids. And so in one sense, it's an uphill battle. But in the other sense, there's a lot of folks saying, this is something that we think could scale and have legs. We want to back it, support it, write checks for it. And so we got pretty tied up into a pretty unique group. With that, pitching a valuation in Michigan is probably a tenth of what we maybe could have gotten in other areas. But we've had a different sort of, you know, upbringing that has allowed us to kind of succeed in some of those differences as well. But yeah, I've made pitches before to Valley-based funds or New York-based funds. And they're like, the only reason why we said no is because your offering was too cheap. It's like, well, let me come back and let me walk in with a different offer. And that's something that we've experienced quite a bit. It's
well, I mean, that's the biggest problem, Matt. You know, I've dealt with this for years. I've raised, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars, right? And actually more than hundreds of millions of dollars. And it's a big challenge and people don't get it. You know, if you're not inside the circle, it's very difficult to get out because there's three things you really need: operational expertise, access to capital, networking contacts. And if you have those three and a resilient team, you can build the unicorn. We've taken company from $0 revenue to companies that sold for $1.35 billion. You need that network. You're right. The high net worth individuals are critically important. They're critically important because they're limited partners in the funds. But there's one thing, there's leap of faith. And then there's also the people that are the VCs that actually get it because day to day, that's what they're doing. You know, my friends that are high net worth, and if you're listening out there, I'm not going to say their names, but if you're listening out there, because they do listen to the podcast sometimes, you know, they're so busy with the things that they do themselves that they don't really have time to help you promote the company except within their companies. It's very interesting.
For sure.
So, you know, the model, it's interesting. You know, 9 out of 10 companies fail. It's not because they don't have a good product or service. It's because they're not inside of that circle a lot of times, or they don't have the storytelling, impactful storytelling that catches your soul. It's very, very interesting. And I've seen it. You know, I've had thousands of companies that I've worked with over the years. And in our portfolio today, we have 176. I see it all the time. And I've seen companies go from $0 revenue to, you know, $100, $150 million raises in a couple of years. It just, you know, you find a common pattern. It's very interesting. You see the pattern. So, you know, what has been the most difficult challenge you faced, Matt, while scaling Reg, and how did you overcome it?
I think, for one, getting out of, you know, I think a superpower to some organizations is founder-led sales. I love selling. I love selling our product. I believe in our product, but it's not always scalable. And quite frankly, we're reaching a point where it's not scalable anymore. So it's getting out of the ability for me to go sell and getting an operational component that our product speaks for itself and sells itself. And we can rally a team around doing that. So that's definitely been a significant challenge. The other piece too is we've taken on funding rounds and I went and hired a bunch of senior leaders that appeared to be executives in the space. And understanding the difference between coaches and players and when you need both or when you need one at the certain level of the organization. When you're getting started, you probably would have a number off the top of your head, but there's a point where the first $5 million in revenue, just throwing a number out, you don't need coaches. You need players. You need people doing the work, rolling up their sleeves day to day. There's no job that you're above, and just building out something that actually is repeatable and scalable. Then it makes sense. And again, I'm just throwing out a number. But to me, I hired probably coaches earlier than I should have. And I also, coming from mowing lawns to software, and I'm not an engineer, I probably was not confident in my ability enough to lead an organization and thought we needed senior leadership too soon. And with senior leadership, there's great resumes, great backgrounds, great press releases, but that doesn't necessarily mean they get along. That doesn't mean necessarily they're impactful. And also there's a difference between a senior leader who's been there, done that, and just wants to coach people versus a senior leader who's been there, done that, and they love the grind and they want to go do it again. That's something that I've learned, been humbled by, and quite frankly, had my butt kicked on numerous different occasions by kind of over hiring senior leadership versus doers who are just actually get the crap done that you need to have done.
No, I understand that completely. I mean, we've gone, you know, part of the challenge is, you know, growing the business at every one of the stages, going from a company that just gets started to a company that is ready to do an IPO on NASDAQ to a company that's getting acquired, and then having the flexibility to make it enchanting, as my friend Guy Kawasaki says, right? Make it so people want to grab it out of your hands and feel it. And those kind of things, that magic is critically important. Most people forget about it because if you don't have that magic and they don't internalize that feeling, it ain't going to happen. And it's hard, right? It's because on one side, you're right. You got to get the ear of those high net worth families, but you got to get everybody's ear.
Yep.
It's gonna resonate so they feel it inside. It tingles inside their body. It's critically important. So can you share a key pivot or decision made? So you talk about the coaches. Are there any other key pivots or decisions you made that significantly improved your business?
Yeah, one was quite frankly an internal reality check. I mean, I'm a sales guy. I enjoy building big partnerships. I actually do enjoy raising capital. I think it's fun. Not everybody does, but I enjoy it. But I also can fall into the trap of chasing the shiny object and chasing the, they're doing that, so we should do that. Or let's get ahead of them. Let's do that, right? And with that, you in your own brain, I think you can go through those thought exercises and those are fun. But when it comes to actually running an organization, you can destroy a funding round. You can blow up your team. You can dismantle so much progress by every new day you have a new idea. And so one of the big things that I've forced myself to do is build, not remove that interest to be curious about the next idea, but more so build the infrastructure on our team that we can actually operationalize and actually, hit our deadlines, hit our numbers, things like that. That's definitely one. The other one too is that when we first launched, we were trying to consider being like a B2B product for companies and like a video resume B2C product. And those are literally two different companies and you can't do both well. I mean, maybe you can, but like we couldn't when we first started, and especially with sort of the growth that started to happen with COVID, it was like, we really got to focus. And so for us, it was a major doubling down on the B2B efforts and scaling that. That's definitely been a big piece for us for sure.
How do you see AI and automation shaping the recruitment industry over the next few years, and how's Wedge preparing for this?
Yeah, I mean, there's a ton happening in the human capital space, and there has been for quite some time. That the recent 3 to 4 years of ChatGPT, I think is like making it so that everybody has it on their laptop or their phone. But I think AI has been around for quite some time in our space. For us, how we're preparing for it is we're just fortunate that we have a boatload of data that we haven't necessarily done a ton with yet. So like we've got 500,000 video interviews and the average video interview is 5 minutes long. We've got 2.5 million minutes of recording that's face transcript or facial recognition transcript data, sentiment analysis. All of that is sitting there that we have, and some of it's stepping into candidate scoring. Some of it's stepping into AI summary. Some of it's stepping into taking what's said on a video, comparing it to a job description and past hiring data, and providing a recommendation of whether this candidate could be a good fit or whether they're a better fit for somewhere else. That's all things that we are actively evaluating. And I think where we have a bit of a leg up among a lot of organizations is that a lot of organizations build those, you know, LLM models. They also build some of the AI, but they don't have necessarily all the data coming in organically. We have a product that people are using day to day, every single day, and tens of thousands of video interviews. Then we take and we figure out what's the best use of that data versus doing anything we can to try to grab any data. So I think we're actually really, really well positioned to be strong in that space and to be something that a lot of folks are interested in, because we have such, I think, enriched, amazing data that there's a lot you can do with.
You know, that begs to another question. So there's an issue with ethics. In fact, I just wrote a book that is just coming out today, I guess.
Congrats.
About ethics. How do you go down through and balance between what your customers will buy and what's ethical, so that you're not, you know, you're not creating negative feelings in the market?
There was, I'm not going to name them, but one of our competitors, they were pretty ahead of the AI game 10 years ago, and they faced a pretty significant lawsuit. It's public, but I'm not going to name them, but about how they were essentially, like, in a really, really great way, evaluating videos to the point where you didn't actually need a recruiter to do an interview. And the tech worked. The problem with it was that it had a lot of false lie detectors, and it had essentially the lawsuit was a discriminatory component. So one of the areas that we have taken a lot of pride in is being a product that, number one, allows you to identify top talent wherever they are in the world. And number two, allow you to identify the right people that you want a part of your workforce and a way to audit that. So you are, you know, lowering discrimination, lowering bias, things like that. We have taken the stance that we want to be a solution that provides a recommendation and an engine that allows you to have a recommendation, but not tell you this is the perfect candidate and you don't need any recruiter to evaluate that at all. Because yes, a lot of those data sets are going to tell you fit. They're going to tell you important things like that. But there's also some cultural pieces that get challenging to compare all those things to. So one of the areas from an ethical standpoint is, A, does the customer actually need it? Not every data piece is invaluable or cool, but does the customer actually need it? And B, is it built on a foundation that's providing recommendation to take technology and make better decisions? Or are we just removing the human component entirely? That's where I think you run into some ethical dilemmas.
You know, as a serial entrepreneur, how do you maintain balance and avoid burnout?
I don't very well, if I can be totally honest. I mean, I just got off a 5-day retreat in Wyoming, and I didn't have my phone on me for 5 days. And that's the first time I've taken any time off in 10 years. So I'm not sitting here pretending that I have that one figured out. And I'm young. I've got a lot of energy. I can work 100 to 120 hour weeks if I need to. But I think for me, it's a big piece is building the infrastructure of the company so that it's not relying on me. I mean, any organization, when you first start, and even when you're in the thick of it, you're relying on the leader or the leadership to keep the ship afloat. That's how it should be. Even Warren Buffett stepping down, right? There's still some relying on him however many years later. But with that being said, I think for me, it's building the infrastructure around the team so the team can keep the company going and succeeding without me. That's one big step. And then I think personally, I'm not very good at taking vacations. I love to work. I love to be active. I love to be busy, but it's finding like the micro vacations throughout the day that give me a little bit of breathing room to come back to reality. So I try to bring my dog into the office every day and take a 10-minute walk. And that's just a getaway, right? And then it gets me back going for the rest of the day. So I don't have a perfect answer for it. And I'll probably reach out to you on the side and lean in any advice you have. But for me, it really comes down to building the right team that the company can grow and sustain without you. So it's not just you carrying all the weight of the world on your shoulders, and it's finding what are those little day-to-day, small daily things you can do that keeps you afloat.
If you get one piece of advice, Matt, to entrepreneurs starting today, what would it be?
Be a cockroach. I think we all obsess over this concept of let's go be the alpha, let's go be a lion, let's go take on the world. And I think most of, in my opinion, in my limited experience, is most of entrepreneurship is surviving the day and getting to the next day and just keep surviving the day and getting the next day and keep surviving the day and getting the next day. And I don't think we emphasize the grit and the resilience enough to actually truly understand what it takes. And what I have found is every week or 2 week or 6 month stretch where you're just getting destroyed, usually you pop out of that with some opportunity that, because you survived, something turned into be amazing and awesome. And so for me, like, quite frankly, it's learn how to be a cockroach and figure out how to have the grit to keep going.
Matt, what kind of impact or legacy do you hope Wedge will leave?
Every single day we're processing thousands of video interviews. And every single one of those video interviews is somebody who is looking for a job to provide for their family, pay their bills, pay for their mortgage, pay for their life, hopefully get them into a better circumstance than what they were leaving. So I think for one, the day-to-day is just providing an opportunity for people to get jobs easier and for companies to hire the best talent easier. And then also, you know, I run the company and hopefully there's some material impact from a wealth standpoint. But even if there's not, I hope that every employee that's worked for Wedge, every investor that was involved in Wedge, every person that I have a chance to impact both in the business and with the product gets one degree better because we played a small part in their life. And so to me, I think impact comes down to the day-to-day things, not these big glamorous stages that you speak on. I think it's truly, you know, the day-to-day piece. And so if I can leave a small mark on every single person, I think that's considered a win.
So closing thoughts, Matt, and then how do people get a hold of you?
Closing thoughts is number one, thank you for having me. This is awesome. And I love the impact and I'm excited to, I know there's a lot I can learn from you. So potentially tapping into that. But I think, you know, if you're out there, you're an entrepreneur, keep your head up. This shit sucks, but also it's impactful and it's life changing. Number two, if you're thinking about being an entrepreneur, like lean on somebody, you know, who's ahead of you, lean on somebody who's beside you and lean on somebody who's maybe a few steps behind you, because you can learn a lot from all stages. But I think lastly, for people that want to get a hold of me, I'm pretty active on LinkedIn. It's Matt Baxter on LinkedIn. If you want to learn more about Wedge, it's wedgehr.com. But yeah, I just want to say a huge thank you for having me. This is awesome.
No, it's great having you here. And once we go off the air, I'll stay on and we'll talk for a minute. So yeah. For all of you out there, thanks for joining one more time. GST Presents. My name is Gary Fowler. I'm your host. Stay happy, stay safe, and stay healthy. And I'll be back to you again soon with another exciting edition. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Matt.